Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tennell, for today, Thursday, January 11th. This is our second show of the year, and we're joined tonight by Trey Bodge. Trey's a makeup artist and beauty writer, and she's done a lot of things that you may be familiar with. She has a wonderful career change to share with us, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about it in a few seconds. But first, we have my sister Denise, who's going to do some beauty news for us.
Good evening, everyone. Just a couple of quick announcements really quickly. Just wanted to remind everyone who's interested in the makeup trade show that IMATS London, the International Makeup Artist Trade Show in London, will be January 29th through 30th. And if you need more information on that, just go to makeupmag.com. The union conference call that we held last night with myself and about seven makeup artists was very successful, and we plan to do it again with about six to seven more makeup artists coming up soon. But I just wanted to put that out there that it was very successful. All the ladies had some really good questions, and we're looking forward to the next one. Got a couple of emails that I want to just put out there. One was from Crystal Wright, and one of her Packaging Your Portfolio graduates is a celebrity and editorial manicurist in New York City. She's currently looking to add two to three assistants to her team. Locals in New York City are preferred, but non-locals are okay too, but must have reliable transportation to New York City and available at short notice with a good attitude. Must be professional at all times, licensed, work fast, be driven, and very experienced. Artists should be comfortable and experienced in all aspects of nails, manicuring, pedicuring, gel, acrylic, nail art, nail structure, chemistry, hand and foot massage. Must be highly skilled in natural nails and be diligent about staying current with trends. Nail art and design enhancements and more are a plus. Nail artists with the full kit preferred, but this can be evolved over time. Maintaining discretion about job specifics is mandatory. Basically, no chatting about gigs on Twitter or Facebook, etc. This is part-time for fashion week, trade shows, photo shoots, house calls, etc. Let's see. I'm looking for information for those who are interested. Interested candidates should submit the following by emailing, and they don't give the information. Okay, sorry about that. I'll get that information and post it on our blog. But if you have Crystal Wright's email address, I'm sure you can email Crystal and get that information as well. OCC Cosmetics is having another airbrush workshop, Airbrush Makeup 101. It's going to be held Sunday, January 23rd from 11 to 7 p.m. It's presented by Michelle Corsay. It's 121 West 27th Street, number 1200 in New York City. Pretty much if you need information about that, you can send an email to info@occmakeup.com or you can call their offices at 212-675-2572. And the class is complimentary with the purchase of an airbrush system, and that's OCC Cosmetics. And that's all I have for tonight.
Cool. I just want to remind everyone, if you have a question or have a comment for our guest tonight, the call-in number is 914 4399. And we have Suzanne Patterson on the line who's going to share her HD tips with us tonight. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Hope it's all going well.
It is.
Good. Well, before we get started, I'd like to tell all of our local listeners in the D.C. metro area that we are having a really great fundraising event, Beautique Bargains for Babies charity event, and it's a new and gently used makeup that's kind of like a dollar store exchange. We're going to have some makeup demonstrations. There's food and prizes and all going to a great cause, Baby Haven, which you know we dearly support, and the directors of that orphanage will be at the event with their new little one that they're adopting, a baby that they had rescued. And they committed the cardinal rule of not falling in love with the kids, you know. So that little Gabriel is very special, and so it'll be really nice. So we invite everybody to come out and join us.
So what's the date on that again?
Sunday the 16th. Okay. From 2 to 6.
Okay. All right.
So, since this is the new year, I just thought I'd kind of have my own little predictions, and these are just totally mine. This is not fact. But just because I like to ride the technology wave here, and I do have some ideas and opinions about, you know, whether this might happen or whether I'm totally wrong, who knows. But first of all, I want to chat a minute about 3D. Personally, I think 3D has peaked with consumers. And, you know, it's like it goes up way high on a curve and then it falls back down again. And we've seen this for decades. Now with all of this explosion of technology that we've had just in the last 5 years, now we've got cameras that are very, very sophisticated. Instead of jerry-rigging, you know, two separate cameras together, now they come together and, you know, you've got two lens capability in one camera body. But, you know, all in all, it's fading in the background. I mean, 3D has always been like jetpacks and flying cars. It's always been like a fanciful feature fad that's never really taken a solid, serious stand in entertainment or with consumers. The main reason is that 3D is a gimmick and it will always be a gimmick. I personally don't understand the huge obsession we've had over HD high resolution, clarity, and lifelike color, and then you run it over or ruin it all or push it back in the background with 3D, because the two can't be side by side. There's one feature is going to be more forward than the other. 3D is definitely a fun feature, you know, and in gaming, it's really, I think, where it's going to have a better foothold. But there's a lot of people who really can't visually process 3D enough to enjoy it, because a lot of people just don't like the way that jumps out and grabs at you, or the way that the characters are separated out a little more forward than a normal 2D picture is. The picture is never going to look as good and crisp as 2D. At least it doesn't to me. I don't think it's you lose one feature or the other. You can't have it all. Consumers are just now beginning to significantly embrace the purchase of HD TVs. I mean, this year has been a huge year, a rise and a jump in purchasing HD TV for homes. It's finally catching on. But there is so much more technology in the wings that waiting to come out and happen, but consumers are just not embracing it as quick as technology is creating it. So, yes, there's HD capability for the homes and everything, but truly I think that's just going to sit on the shelves a lot longer, because people are now just trying to assimilate HD TV and getting that nice bigger screen. Screens are, you know, bigger. The average household has a larger screen that's probably it's jumped from 39 inches to now about 42 inches. So the average HD home screen is about 42 inches, and that's pretty significant. Okay, so the next thing is, and I don't think this is a prediction. I think this is definitely fact.
I'm sorry, before you go on to that, I just wanted to know, did you see the, I don't know if you watched the championship game last night, the football game?
Which one? You mean the...
Auburn and Oregon, the college football game?
No, uh-uh.
But they had, they mentioned that they had a couple of HD cameras at the game.
Mm-hmm.
They actually showed the cameras, which I thought they looked pretty interesting.
They actually had, I'm sorry, which camera?
They actually had, I'm sorry, not HD, but 3D cameras.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
How'd you like it?
They looked kind of weird, but it was interesting.
Did it, you know, the thing is, did it look like it was a little faded out or fuzzed out on the edges?
Well, I mean, I didn't have, like, 3D glasses or anything. They showed a bunch of people in a certain section that had, like, 3D glasses, and they were watching
right.
it. You know,
right, because if they tried to broadcast it on your screen, it would be lightly fuzzed out on the edges. Because you need that dimension, you know, that you get with the, I can't explain really how the glasses are made, but they're made with different optical resolutions that allow that. I don't have really a really good explanation on how to explain the 3D because it's never really interested me to really figure out exactly the mechanical process for that. But I'm sure that it, you know, you can do some research on the internet. But I know that when you look at, if you even go to Best Buy, they do have 3D televisions that are out now. And
mm-hmm.
if, without the glasses, you look at the screen and you can definitely see all the main action is a bit fuzzed out because when you put on the glasses, that's where you get the clarity. But interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
I thought
so. I, you know, like I said, this is just my own personal opinion. But if history tells us anything, it comes and it goes. So.
Right.
It's, you know, like beta was supposed to be the big thing, remember? And then that fell by the wayside, and everybody was stuck with beta tapes and beta players and all that back in the 80s. So, but anyway, so the next little thing I want to throw out there is, and this is not a prediction, but this is definitely more reality because I see more and more productions migrating to LED lighting technology. This is simply because they really are much more efficient at holding color in a scene, in illumination. That's just kind of this way of describing it. They don't have color spikes, meaning that they don't have a reduction in a certain color of wavelength. They are constant. They also require less power to generate, and they can even be battery operated. Now, LEDs has long been embraced in the theater industry, you know, the rock concerts and large auditorium-type projections, those kinds of things. They have been very, very popular with that. The big plus with LEDs is that they just don't generate heat. There is no heat output of it because of the way that each little round little thing is a pixel in there. And the downside, of course, with tungstens is that they use more power than LEDs do, and tungstens do run hot, and tungstens are a mainstay in lighting with, you know, in shoots. So, you know, LEDs, again, were once considered specialty lighting instruments and very much theatrical, you know, especially with rock concerts, but they have become so adaptable for film and TV now. In fact, most late-night shows and talent competition shows that you see use these huge movable LED light platforms because they're really, really easy to move around and to change their angles. They look really good on talent because the light temperature is always consistent. They don't have to gel them up or down. They don't have to worry about any color spikes. And they work really, really well with moving light platforms. one thing that you, if you go back and remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, remember the show with Regis Philbin?
Yeah.
They use a lot of, there's a lot of moving light platforms on that show. And that show really started it all with the LED lighting. So that's just kind of my little, you know, start of the year thing.
So as makeup artists, what should we be thinking about when it's with this 3D? Any tips?
You know, I'm probably not the person to ask because that will never be my forte. I should never say never, but I just work in video production here, and my chances of really getting on a large HD, you know, set with doing a 3D film or something like that is not as likely as you guys. But and that's by choice. But you know,
right.
I just feel I really think that keeping your makeup clean, you know, keeping yourself polished in the HD realm, and the fact that, you know, not really having to pay too much attention really to whether it's shot in 3D or not, I think you need to really focus on the fact that it is going to be run through an HD platform. So you just continue to keep your skills really polished in that area. You know, unless we have a body of experience of people working in that, you know, if they've got some ideas, but quite honestly, I don't have really any good suggestions other than, you know, I have to be honest. I've never worked on a production that was going to go 3D or shot in 3D. So my inclination is that you would treat it like you would an HD, you're shooting in HD. That's the safest thing to do.
Okay.
Making sure that, you know, you're up on your skills with that. But I honestly don't have a particular, and maybe someone in the audience has worked on a 3D shoot and has seen the end production and can suggest, but keep it clean.
Keep it clean, that's right.
Well, truthfully, yes, you know, keep it clean. I mean, my gut feeling tells me that, you know, if you have a lot of color going on, of course that's going to vibrate like it does in HD anyway. If you've got
right.
too much color competition going on, or if your color schemes or your undertones, you know, all those basic elements that you know you have to keep really, really sharp and really, really carefully match to your talent, they're going to vibrate in HD. So, yeah, they would vibrate in 3D, right? It's just common
right.
sense. It really is common sense. Sorry I can't be more helpful about that. I don't have any firsthand experience, but I can... I don't think that I really want to be a 3D makeup expert either,
right.
because I just think it's... I think it's peaked. I think it's not. I think consumers are. We are very fickle. We get tired of something and we go on to the next thing.
Right.
People will get tired of the gimmick. HD is here to stay. It is solid, and it is. You know, another thing, another prediction that I might as well throw on there is I think your 1080 format is going to be just one of different formats that are coming down the road. I think STEMP is, and that's the governing body, I think they're going to approve a bigger standard for HD. So you've got 720, 1080, you're going to have another standard. That's the one thing. I think by the end of the decade, you will have another format that everything else, all the cameras will change, everything else, who knows what that what will be beyond 1080, but we are going to go beyond 1080. That is for sure. That is definite. When, I don't know, but if I keep my ear to the ground to camera guys, and this is the rumbling, This is the rumblings I hear. And STMP, the governing the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, which is the governing body that decides what the formats are, they aren't denying that there's going to be a bigger format, but they're not confirming it either.
Right.
So get ready.
That's what I mean.
Keep, the bottom line is keep it clean. Keep your makeup clean. Keep it accurate. Keep it correct. Keep it matched.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, thanks a bunch, Suzanne. We appreciate the information.
Well, you know, I appreciate it, and I will talk to you guys soon in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Shrey, darling.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
We are wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Now, why don't you start off by telling our listening audience who you are and what you've been working on and, you know, how you got started in this crazy beauty biz.
Oh, sure. Where to begin? Let's see. I've been in the business for about 20 years now. I started out working for Visage Beauté. For those of you who are maybe over 35, might remember the foremost custom blending color line that launched in Bergdorf Goodman back in the early 90s. And it was there that I learned how to hand make makeup, everything from foundation, powder, concealer, and then color as well, lips, eyes, cheeks. And it was founded by a gentleman named Roy Carell, who was a makeup artist and beauty executive, and he was quite a visionary. He's actually no longer living, but I did have the privilege to study under him, and that's where I got my start in makeup. And, you know, in addition, my mom owned a beauty store from when I was a little girl, and so I was always working in her beauty store in Massachusetts, giving makeovers to my friends and to her customers. So I've always had a love of beauty. And during that time, actually, when I was a young girl working for my mom, I became very interested in skincare and fragrance as well as hair care. So I have a long history in the beauty business, but my real professional adult life in beauty began with Visage. Unfortunately, Visage kind of came and went very, very quickly. They were maybe only around for about 3 years, and I was with the company for the majority of that time. And then after Visage, after they were starting to become a bit of a sinking ship, and they were bought out, and the buyout didn't work well for the company, so they eventually went under. Thankfully, before that happened, I moved on to Kiehl's, which I was fascinated with from my days at Bergdorf Goodman. And this was before Kiehl's was bought out by L'Oreal. So at the time when I was working for them, they were a family-owned company and a very rapidly growing company, and it was actually an amazing time to work for Kiehl's. Because of the fact that they were family-owned and growing so quickly, there was a lot of opportunity there. So I started out working at the counter just like everyone else. Everyone that worked there was required to work at the counter, help customers, make samples, answer the phone. It was a very cooperative environment. But I was also able to take their mail order department that was growing very rapidly and start running it for them. So I established a training protocol for the mail order company, and all the new people who came in as the company was growing, they were all trained by me, and then I had an assistant there as well. But that was an amazing experience for someone, you know, in my early 20s to then mid-20s, working for such a dynamic, rapidly growing company. But because they are family-owned or were family-owned, there's really only so far you can go within a company like that. So my partners at 3 Custom Color Specialists and I, this is obviously before we launched the company, we started thinking that we wanted to do something with custom blending. We had seen how important it was while working for Visage. My partner, Chad Haydock, also worked for Visage with me, and so we really saw how vital custom blending was, but also the sort of pitfalls that were there with custom. So we started, brewing some ideas for three custom color specialists, and we officially launched in 1997 just with a line of ready-to-wear lip color that we sold in Sephora and other stores and online as well. And then we also had the custom blending service for lip color, and that's where we would reproduce discontinued colors, and also working with makeup artists, creating colors for their kits or for their specific needs like Broadway and film, et cetera. And that's where Three Custom Color started. We started just with lips again, and then we branched out to other categories like cheeks and eyes and concealer and face powder and, you name it, and custom blended all of those categories along the way. And where I am now is back in early 2010, I started feeling very professionally restless. I'd been with the brand of Three Custom Color for, at that point, 14 years, and I felt like I wasn't learning anymore. I felt like I was bottoming out in terms of my drive and my creativity and what I was doing for the brand. And that became more and more sort of intense as the months went by. So I notified the partners that I was ready to make a change, and I left the brand in April of this year. And since then, I have been working as a beauty and lifestyle journalist, as well as consulting for a number of beauty brands in two specific areas, either in product development, specifically on the color side, because that is my strong specialty, but then also helping brands tweak their brand messaging. So that's what I've been doing now, and sort of and also doing freelance makeup work, which I've done, for many, many years anyway. But now sort of in flux, trying to decide whether I'm going to take a position, a permanent position with a company, looking at sort of anywhere between small and large corporate beauty companies, or if I'm going to stay on doing writing and consulting. So I'm sort of in flux. I'm not quite sure which way things are going to take me, but it's actually a really exciting time for me professionally, and it's definitely given me the excitement that I was lacking at sort of in my last days at Three Custom Color. So that's where I am at this point.
You sound like you have a lot of options, though.
Yeah. I mean, a bit of a tornado at this point. I'm not, I'm interested in so many things, so I'm sort of all over the place, which is something that I'm not used to, but it's actually been a lot of fun.
Right. I mean, like from your beauty and lifestyle, being a beauty and lifestyle journalist, to consulting with other beauty brands as well as your makeup work.
Right.
Wow. And now you're now considering a position with the beauty brand.
Yeah, I mean, I've been meeting with a number of beauty brands, and it's been an interesting road simply because, as entrepreneurs yourselves, you know that you wear a lot of hats. And you do everything from PR to marketing to the writing to the product development. But then to find a position in, especially a larger corporation, that's a very difficult fit. So it's been really nice for me to bounce around and meet with the L'Oreals of the world and the Estee Lauders of the world, and people are really receptive and open to seeing me and talking with me. But the challenge is, where do we put this person? So I've had a lot of really interesting meetings and conversations, and obviously given the economy, it's not like a position can be created for me because most of these companies are on hiring freezes. So what it's come down to is, a handful of positions, have been kind of open that I've officially interviewed for. But, ultimately it's come down to, human resources saying, you're going to be bored. Like, you're not going to want to do you know, brand messaging or education all the time, for instance. And so, you know, I've been kind of holding out and just waiting for the right position to open if I am going to go that route. The other option is going with a sort of a small to medium beauty company, and that's looking more likely. I'm having some very interesting and exciting conversations with a couple of brands, talking with them about me stepping in as sort of a, you know, a dual role, whether it's product development and education, product development or and doing, you know, on-air presenting on QVC or infomercials, because I have experience with that as well. So that's where it's looking like it's going to go. But on the other hand, I love freelancing too. So, you know, again, like I'm all over the place, but it's actually really exciting, and I feel like things are going to settle down a little bit in the next couple months. But I've been enjoying the ride as it goes on, and I think that that's something really important to put out there, especially for those listeners who are in flux at this time. It's really important to just remain open to the opportunities that come your way, because you never know where you're going to land. And, you know, if you close yourself off and you set yourself out on a specific path, you might end up missing something. So I think it's really important to remain open as much as you can and take those roads that open up to you.
Well, Trey,
I'm sorry, Trey, I just wanted to ask, this is Denise, just wanted to ask you really quickly, like, is there a dream job for you at one of these companies? Like, is there something in particular that you would like to do for one of these brands?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, this whole process has really alerted me to what I really ultimately do want is a dual role, you know, not just one, you know, doing just product development, for instance. I mean, I would love to have a role where, you know, I'm creating product and designing product, but I'm also working with makeup artists, and maybe I'm doing some PR, and maybe I'm doing some education and or, you know, on-air presenting. So it's, you know, a package of things, because that's what I'm most at home doing. I'm very efficient as someone who bounces around. So that's sort of what I'm really putting my energy towards, is finding that kind of position where I can, you know, utilize all of my talents and all, or at least some, and my experience as well, and bring that to the table. I think that's where I'm valuable, and those are the kind of conversations that I've been having most recently. It's, you know, talking about a kind of multifaceted role, and that, again, will be with, you know, probably a small to medium-sized company, because the larger corporations are more regimented in the way that they're laid out. Whereas a small to medium-sized company is going to have a little bit more flexibility, a little bit more creativity. So I'm pretty excited. I you know, I'll have more to tell you in the next couple of months, I think.
And just listening to you, what I was gonna say a few minutes ago was that sounds like you have so much to offer a company, because you've worked, you know, in so many different areas of the beauty business, and you have so much to bring to a company, I think, you know, as a makeup artist, you know, and actually working with, you know, different products, you know, and then your, you know, your consulting work where you work as product in product development or brand messaging or even as a beauty and lifestyle journalist, actually.
Yeah.
It seems like
yeah.
you have so much to bring to the table for wherever you decide to work. So much luck with that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think whoever you decide to go with will be happy.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I mean, it's been a very, very interesting time to have these conversations with people. But, you know, there are so few roles like the ones we're talking about. So I think it's a matter of being patient and, you know, just, again, keeping my mind open to what might come.
Okay. Cool. Are there any questions right now from anyone in the chat room?
Not yet. Does anyone have any questions? Just type them or call in at 914-803-4399.
In the meantime, Trey, tell us a little bit about your work as a beauty and lifestyle journalist.
Well, I started writing for MainStreet.com specifically back in maybe March of this year, and I was writing beauty for them specifically. And then because they're actually a financial website, they only had so much room for beauty coverage, they started asking me to write on other topics as well. Which has been actually really interesting. I've been writing about parenting and travel and produce and summer camps and charities and gift guides and all sorts of things. And I discovered something about myself that I love learning about new things and sharing that information in a very sort of fun and lighthearted but informative way to my readers. So that's actually been a blast. For me, I've had a really good time doing that and would love to continue to do that as well. If I obviously do stay on the freelance track, I definitely will pursue more writing opportunities at other publications, simply because I've discovered something else that I enjoy and that I'm hopefully good at. So that's been really fun.
Cool. So can you just share a little information about your career with Reed Custom Color Specialist? You know, what was your main job of focus with the company?
I was creative director, and so basically it was my job to do a lot of the product development, come up with the new collections, new products, new formulations. The company is very trend-based, but also very practical. So it was really fun every season, at Fashion Week to kind of watch what was happening on the runway and see if there were things that we could then share with our customers in a very workable way. For instance, last year we saw, it was in fall 2009, we saw a lot of black lips and or very, very deep lips on the runway, and obviously not something that the average woman can wear on a daily basis, but we decided to create a very sheer lipstick and lip gloss, which was almost black, but because of its sheerness, it went on to the lips in such a beautiful way, and it became something. It's called Noir. It's a color it's one of my all-time favorite colors for almost any skin tone, frankly. It's something that everyone can wear, and it looks so gorgeous, but so kind of sexy, but wearable. And that, I think, sums up what Three Custom Color Specialist is good at, is bringing something that's very, very hot and very trendy, but making it wearable for the everyday woman. And so that was my role, is sort of to find those things out in, whether it's street fashion or, our runway or what we're seeing in movies or what we're seeing on the red carpet, and translating that to the customer.
Mm-hmm.
So creating those collections, working with my partners in doing that, but then creating the brand messaging that went around it, and then creating the educational materials that went with it as well. So start to finish creating those products. I was also the in-house liaison to our publicist. So, for a long time the brand worked with a variety of outside publicity companies, and so I was sort of the in-house person working with them on the press releases and the strategy, and but then also serving as the voice and the face of the brand, interviewing with editors, and so I've been doing that for a long time as well. And then, again, just anything that had to do with the voice of the brand, writing the copy for the packaging and the website and all of that as well. So that was essentially my role. And then in 2009, when we started going on QVC in the UK and then in the US, I did that as well.
Okay.
Cool.
So what do you see as some of the trends for spring?
I'm actually really excited for spring because, spring always brings a liveliness to beauty. And this season in particular, I'm very excited because I'm seeing a lot of color. You know, we always have that neutral face that we see on the runway, and, you know, that's great. And I'm all for neutral makeup, but, you know, I'm very excited to see some color. I mean, the bright red and orange and hot pink lips are going to be everywhere. I mean, they were all over the runways, and, you know, I expect to see them, you know, translated to the consumer in a really fun way. I mean, you know, looking at the runway, I mean, everyone from, you know, Von Furstenberg to Sonia Rykiel to Fendi to Dior to Gucci, I mean, everybody was doing a hot lip and a, you know, an opaque lip that was, you know, glossy for the most part, but full
right.
coverage. So I was really excited to see that. And then conversely, a very soft lip and a very bright eye, which I think is maybe less practical, but just as fun and playful. A lot of purple on the eyes, other pastels like greens and bright peaches and even sort of reds used around the eyes, obviously done carefully, can be really beautiful. I noticed that on, you know, Kenzo and Derek Lam and Jason Wu. So I'd say that those are the two trends that I'm most excited about. You know, again, there's always that beautiful neutral face that's, you know, sort of bronzy and glowing. But, you know, I think you see that every season and, you know, every
right.
year I think it gets more, it's done better and better. And, you know, I think that's great. But I'm just loving the color that we're going to see this spring.
Right. And so we have a question from the chat room, and Janelle's asking, what influences the formation of a makeup trend?
For me, it's runway. I think runway is a great place to start because, and it's funny because I think all the brands are watching runway, frankly, because what you see on the runway inevitably turns up at the makeup counter. You know, and you do have some red carpet thrown in there as well. And then, of course, there's street fashion. Like, you can't deny that, especially in you know, in urban areas, it's like, you know, trends are started there. But I think runway is really the launch pad for most of the makeup trends.
Okay, and then Rochelle's asking, what is a trend you'd like to see fade away?
Let's see. Well, you know, I did, and I can't recall what runways I saw it on, but I saw it on a few. You know, metallic kind of popped up a bit, and I love metallics. I love shimmer when used, you know, well. But I saw a lot of metallic on the eyes with very little definition in terms of liner. You know, it was more like gold, like cream on the eyes or like a greenish khaki on the eyes. But no definition with a darker shade along the lash line and no mascara. And I hated that, and I hope never to see that again on the runway. I thought that was really – it's just not flattering for an everyday woman. I mean, yes, it's ethereal and sort of mysterious and otherworldly on the runway, but, like, for everyday women, it's just not workable. So I would like to see that go away.
Okay.
I'm not mincing words, obviously. Didn't like that.
So Janelle's asking again, what or who inspires a trend, and what makes a trend hot or not?
Well, you know, coming from sort of my practical approach that I usually apply to so many things, I think what really makes a trend hot is if it's wearable. You know, I mean, it can look fabulous on the runway, but, you know, ultimately, like we were talking about before with the black lips, it's like, that's not going to happen, you know, in a very big way if most women can't wear it. So I think it's the wearability, the translation from the fantasy to the everyday woman is what makes a trend hot.
Right.
And obviously teenagers. You can't deny
right.
what teenagers are doing. If you know, it's like, who knows, like next season teenagers may decide to start wearing, you know, fluorescent pink eyeshadow, and that could become a trend. It would be unfortunate, but, you know, they will drive that. I think teenagers and tied in with street fashion are a powerful force.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about something that can be overused and misplaced at times. Let's talk about bronzers. And, like, in your opinion, what are some do's and don'ts with bronzing?
That's a great question. I think that I think bronzer's great to, you know, obviously in the winter, especially when we're not feeling very lively and it's so cold out and our skin is pale. And I think bronzer's great, but a couple things. I think where bronzers really too often go wrong is with shimmer. I see so many of these super, super shimmery brick kind of bronzers, and I just, you know, unless you're a makeup artist or you're skilled at doing your own makeup at home, I just think that that's not flattering. To have, like, this whole sparkly brown face is not flattering. So I prefer a bronzer with, you know, little to no shimmer. And then, obviously, you can go shimmering, you know, you can use a shimmer sort of to highlight the face on the high points and, you know, be more carefree with that, but I think bronzers with a lot of shimmer, I'm not a fan. But I also think what's important about bronzers is using the right color. And what to me, what's important to me is undertone, and knowing if you're cool or more on the rosy side or warm, more on the golden side, and choosing a bronzer accordingly. If you're cool, then you should be using a bronzer that's slightly rosier. Whereas if you're warm, using a bronzer that's slightly more golden, that's going to complement your skin. And because ultimately, if you're using a bronzer, don't you want it to make you look like you've naturally tanned? Yes.
Right.
So if you're cool toned, you're going to naturally tan a little bit rosy. And if you're warm, you're going to naturally tan a bit golden. So I think it's important to choose the right undertone in your bronzer. And then I think, you know, with application, applying in that sort of, you know, and we all talk about it as makeup artists, that classic kind of, you know, three shape on both sides of the face and then a little bit on the nose, like hitting those high points with the bronzer is very flattering. You know, and as long as you have the right color and there's not so much sparkle, I think the bronzer can be really lovely.
Right. Now, do you have, is there any particular bronzers that you'd like to mention that have a little less shimmer? Because, if you walk into Sephora or if you walk into any makeup department in a department store, all you see is shimmer. And when you're trying to pick out a bronzer, that's all you see.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I'm biased. I think the three custom color bronzers are great. There's a very, very subtle satin kind of shimmer to the bronzers. And you know, I've used them so much and helped create them, so those are the bronzers that I'm really partial to. I think you're right. I think that, you know, basically everywhere you look, there's so many shimmery bronzers. So, you know, to be honest, like I haven't ventured out to find a new one yet. As you know, with my work for Main Street, like I was evaluating a lot of products, and I didn't really see anything that I really fell in love with, to be honest. You know, as my three custom color products run out, I'm sure I'll be out there pounding the pavement for the perfect bronzer, and then I could answer this question better. But I haven't found anything yet that tops three custom color.
Yeah, I really don't know where it is, but
yeah.
So let's get a little bit into something that you brought up that I really wanted to discuss, and that's, you know, cool versus warm. Like,
yeah.
What are the big misconceptions about, you know, if you're cool or if you're warm, and how do people mess that up so much?
You know, it's funny because I think that what confuses people, confuses either consumers and makeup artists, is, you know, that so many different companies have their own rules about, you know, what's cool and what's warm. And, you know, prescriptives have their, you know, their numbers that they were using. And, you know, everybody's got this whole thing. And I think really what it comes down to is like dialing it back and looking at the basics of the skin. I think we can also get thrown off based on ethnicity. Someone can say,
yeah,
oh, I'm Japanese, so I'm this. And, you know, I'm African-American, so I'm this. And that isn't always the case. I think a great way to tell if you're cool or warm is to gauge it based on how you tan. If your skin, if you tan you know, say if you went out without sunscreen, obviously we're all going crazy for sunscreen now, which is, I think, amazing. Mm-hmm. We're taking better care of our skin now. But if we went out in the sun without sunscreen and we were out for 10 minutes, are we red or are we brown? And if we're red, you're most likely on the cooler side. If you're brown, you're most likely on the warmer side. Another good way to tell is to look at the veins on the inner wrist. If your veins, and if you are sort of, if you're not too dark skinned, if, you know, if you're say like, you know, fair to like mocha color, this is a good way to tell. If you look at the veins on your inner wrist and they tend to look more blue, that means that you're on the cooler side. And if they tend to look more green, it means you're on the warmer side. Another misconception, I think people try to base their warm and cool on eye color, and I don't think that's even relevant, to be honest.
Right.
You know, and that's something that comes up in conversation all the time with cool and warm. I don't think it's related. The eye conversation is a totally different conversation if you're talking about how do I, you know, brighten my green eyes and how do I, you know, play up my brown eyes. That has nothing to do with warm or cool. I think that's a different topic. So those are the basics with warm or cool. I think, again, it comes down to, you know, how you tan and the veins on your inner wrist, and that's a good way to really tell. One more thing I want to bring up, too. I think, you know, it's the common misconception of, like, oh, I'm fair, so I'm cool, or I'm dark, so I'm warm, and that's not true either.
Right.
There are a lot of darker-skinned women who are on the cooler side. You know, there's, you know, a Caribbean, you know, West Indian kind of background that you can tend to be redder. And, you know, you have to be mindful of that when you're matching your foundation color or your concealer or finding colors that are flattering to your skin tone. And conversely, someone can be very, very fair, and they can be very golden, almost sallow looking. So it's more about the skin tone and less about the depth of tone in the skin or the ethnicity.
Good stuff.
A lot of stuff, I know.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Very interesting stuff.
So let me ask you, just out of curiosity, this is just a personal question of mine. Do you have any, and since you brought up fragrances and, you know, how you were involved in that as well, do you have any favorite fragrances for the spring?
I'm really into right now the Aujon fragrances, which were formulated by a colleague of mine and her partners. She runs a company called Purpose Built, and they do brand consulting and branding, and they partnered with the Aujon boutique in New York City and created these unisex fragrances, which I think are really fabulous. And they, I think they have four now, and I'm, you know, I'm in love with the number three, and it's not very springy. I mean, I'm not quite thinking spring yet for fragrance. I'm still kind of in the, you know, more like a heavier, you know, more spicy fragrance. So the number three is that. So that's what I'm thinking about right now for fragrance. That's my favorite fragrance at the moment.
Okay. And we have one last question from the chat room. And let's see. And Janelle's asking, what is a true neutral skin tone?
Well, you know, that's a good question because, you know, there are people out there who are equal parts warm and cool. And that is, you know, you might tend to tan a little bit rosy and then it gets brown. You may have, you know, equal blue and green veins on your inner wrist. If you are one of those people, you are really fortunate and you can wear just about any, you know, any color. So there are those people out there. I don't think it's very common, to be honest, but I've met plenty of them, and I'm always excited when they're in my chair because my job is that much easier. So there are neutrals out there.
Cool. And let me ask you, Trey, really quickly, have you noticed any changes in the beauty industry since you first started?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when I was at Kiehl's and, you know, at Visage and Kiehl's and then 3 Custom Color, there was it was much less corporate then.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was sort of that's when all the brands, the indie brands were kind of popping up. It was like Bobbi Brown was selling her pen lipstick colors at Bergdorf Goodman, and, you know, NARS was just getting started, and MAC was in Canada. You know, it's like there was so much excitement going on, and the big corporations only owned a few brands. And now, you know, the big corporations own everything. And, you know, and because I think we're such a social culture now with social media and Twitter and Facebook and all of that, there's a lot of smaller companies out there doing really exciting things, and there's a lot more opportunity for them to share their message with people. So that excitement is still there, but I think because of the big sort of monster companies, it's difficult for the smaller brands to kind of break in, and where do you sell your products? Because, you know, Estee Lauder Corporation, I mean, I can't even begin to think how many brands they own, but, you know, they own, 80% of the real estate at Macy's, at the cosmetic floor. So how do you break into that being a small brand? It's very difficult, as I'm sure you guys know from, you know, with Illusions. I mean, it's really tough to command any sort of real estate in a large retailer. So where do you go? I think a lot of the larger retailers are not friendly to smaller companies simply because of the investment that it requires to sustain a business at Sephora, at Ulta, at Macy's, at Bloomie's. So smaller companies are kind of left to their own devices. And again, thankfully for social media, there is a way to get the word out there, but like ultimately, like where do you sell? So that's what I think has changed. It's from being like really exciting and lots of stuff going on, but like lots of room for smaller companies to do big things. Now I'm not sure if that's really happening. I think it's tougher now for smaller companies and to get kind of counter space and real estate.
Right. Well, we've run out of time, unfortunately. I'm enjoying this conversation. We're going to have you back really soon.
I would love to. Thank you.
So what we normally do is we normally ask all of our guests, first, if there's anything that you'd like to share, if you have websites or anything you want to share with our listeners that they may go and find out a little bit more about you, Facebook, Twitter, or that, you can feel free to just shout it out. And then we normally ask all of our listeners what beauty means to them.
Well, people can reach me at True Trey on Facebook, and that's where, you know, daily I'm shouting out my favorite beauty finds, my favorite skincare, cosmetics, and also, you know, if I find a great recipe, I'll put it up there, or something like crafts for the kids, or, you know, so it's kind of a fun place to go and get quick snippets about, you know, some of my favorite things. I'll also post blog postings from especially makeup artists who I really admire, and I'll put their posts up there. So that's True Trey on Facebook, and then you can follow me at True Trey on Twitter as well. And, you know, very similar, I'm kind of talking about my favorite things, my finds, and sort of I'll ask questions on Makeup Monday or Skincare Tuesday to kind of engage people and have lively discussions about various topics. So that's where you can find me. And then, you know, I have a lot of articles up on mainstreet.com as well, so you can read what I'm writing about there also.
Cool. And what is beauty to you?
Beauty to me, you know, beauty to me is feeling good about yourself. I've worked with hundreds of clients over the years, and something that always strikes me is how much women struggle with their own beauty and their own self-confidence. And I think that life is too short to worry so much about how we look. And I think it's a makeup artist's gift to help a woman feel beautiful. And so that's what beauty is to me, is feeling good with yourself, feeling comfortable and at home with yourself.
Absolutely. And with that being said, that is the end of our show. Again, thank you so much, Trey. My sister will be talking to you about coming back on the show, so look out for a conversation with her on that. And if you really like the show, to our listeners, go out and mark it as a favorite. Send us a comment, and in about maybe 15 minutes, it'll be up on the actual site so you can go back out and listen again. Or, Trey, if you want to post it to your Facebook or whatever you want to do with it, it'll be out there soon. So everybody go back and check it out. And, again, we'll be back again next Tuesday, and we'll keep you posted on who our guest is. Maybe Trey, maybe someone else. You never know. So you have to stay tuned to find out. Good night, everybody. And thank you again,
everyone.
Trey.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.